broadcasting live from atop the Rocky Mountains, the crossroads of the West. You are listening to the Liberty Roundtable Radio Talk Show.
All right, happy to have you along, my fellow Americans. Sam Bushman live on your radio, hard-hitting news the network refused to use, no doubt, continues now. This, my fellow Americans, is the broadcast for May the 11th of the year of our Lord, 2021. This is hour two of two, with the goal always to protect life, liberty, and property, and to promote God, family, and country on your radio in the traditions of our founding fathers. Wow, it's the culture war, stupid. Netflix promoting a gay Jesus. Let's stand against it big time. Sadly, a man goes on stabbing spree in New Zealand. Four people stabbed, three people critically. A random attack, they say. Again, I hope they don't start wanting to take knives. What are they going to want to take next, huh? Now, I think it's sad that that person went ballistic, but somebody with a gun ought to stop that thug right in his tracks and said, you know what? You're not going to stab people. That's not happening on my watch. That's why we need the ability to defend ourselves. After all, it is a God-given inalienable right, don't you know? Codified by the Second Amendment to the United States Constitution, the supreme law of the land. Let's be very clear indeed, okay? All right, we also talked about these racial stories in USA Today. All right, what a sad tale to tell. Now, I want to talk about something entirely different. Let's talk about black. This is a different kind of black, though, ladies and gentlemen. This isn't racial at all, at least not yet. They'll probably try to find a way that it is, but right now they don't got it. So it's not racist yet. But here it is. Headline is blackouts. We're talking about electricity, ladies and gentlemen, not race. Okay? Can we do that? Or are we racist for not continuing to talk about race? See? All right. Headline says blackouts are growing threat to U.S. cities. Amen to that. The story is by Christopher Flavell, the author of a new study, said the combination of blackouts and extreme heat may be the deadliest climate-related event we can imagine. Dateline Washington. Wow. What do you think of that? Extreme heat. Blackouts are a growing threat. Dateline Washington, the growing risk of an overlapping heat wave and power failures poses a severe threat that major American cities are simply not prepared for, new research suggests. Wow. Power failures, they say, have increased by more than 60% since 2015 alone. Even as, they say, climate change has made heat waves worse, according to the new research published in the journal Environmental Science. Wow. They say using computer models to study three large cities, the authors estimated that a combined blackout and heat wave would expose at least two-thirds of residents in those cities to heat exhaustion or heat stroke. And although each of the cities in the study has dedicated what they call public cooling centers for people who need relief from the heat, those centers could accommodate no more than 2% of a given city's population. Wow. The authors then found that an overwhelming number of residents would be in severe danger if this happened. A widespread blackout during an intense heat wave could be the deadliest climate-related event we can imagine. Think about that. I don't even know how to respond to this exactly. Because are we aware of this, folks? A widespread blackout during an intense heat wave may be the deadliest climate-related event we can imagine. These are the authors of this study. Said Brian Stone Jr., or Jr., he's the professor at the School of City and Regional Planning at Georgia Institute of Technology. He's also the lead author of the study. He said, yet such a scenario is increasingly likely. The findings come just months after a winter storm knocked out power for millions of people in Texas, causing massive outages, causing more than 150 deaths, and demonstrating how easily severe weather can overwhelm electrical grids. I agree with all that. But as much as winter storms and extreme cold remain a threat, the greater risk to human health as temperatures rise is from extreme heat. Heat is already the most dangerous type of severe weather event. By one estimate, they say, killing 12,000 Americans already each year. Wow. And climate change, they say, is making heat waves more frequent and more severe. The changing climate also seems to be making power failures more common. For example, from 2015 to 2020, the number of blackouts annually in the United States doubled, Dr. Stone said. Wow. And those blackouts were more likely to occur during the summer months, suggesting they were being driven in part by high temperatures, which increase demand on the electrical grid as families turn up their AC to cool down. They say because both heat waves and blackouts are becoming more frequent, then the probability of concurrent heat waves and blackouts is very likely, and it's rising, Dr. Stone said. Now, wow. So Dr. Stone, along with a team of eight other researchers from Georgia Tech and from Arizona State, the University of Michigan, and the University of Guelph, I guess that's in Ontario, Canada, they set out to gauge the human health consequences when power failures coincide with heat waves. Interesting study, to say the least, isn't it? To do that, they picked three huge cities: Atlanta, Georgia, Detroit, and Phoenix. They looked at recorded temperatures during some of their most severe heat waves. The next, they used computers to model the temperatures in different neighborhoods. If those heat waves were to hit at the same time that a citywide blackout disabled air conditioners, then they wanted to know how hot the insides of homes would get under those conditions, right? Well, they did all this research, and they came back. Something that Dr. Stone said, we've never tried this before. They collect the data showing the building characteristics for every single residential structure in each city. For example, building, age, construction, material level of insulation in the homes, number of floors. The results were alarming. In Atlanta, more than 350,000 people or about 70% of the residents would be exposed to indoor temperatures equal to or greater than 32 degrees Celsius, which means 89.6 degrees Fahrenheit, the level at which National Weather Service's heat classification index says heat exhaustion and heat stroke are possible. So they got this big, huge study going on. In Detroit, more than 450,000, or about 68%, would be exposed to that same indoor temperature. In Phoenix, the entire population be at risk, well over a million people. Wow. Oh, 1.7 million people. They say some people don't even have air conditioners, and that would be worse for the people who don't have air conditioners, as primarily the, what do you want to call it, poor among us? Yeah. Anyway, there you have it. There's a lot of people in Detroit that don't have any money, right? Anyway, we'll talk about this more in seconds. This is Liberty Roundtable Live.
Scott Bradley here. Most Americans are painfully aware that the nation is on the wrong track and in dire straits. Unfortunately, most political pundits only nibble around the edges when they claim to address the issues. Even worse, many of the so-called solutions are simply rewarmed servings of what got us into the mess we currently face. And the politicians think we're so gullible and naive that we'll buy their lies that they have reformed and now understand where they led us astray. Unfortunately, the truth of the matter is that they simply wish to continue to hold power. The solution to America's challenges is found in returning to the timeless principles found in the United States Constitution. My book and lecture series will reawaken in Americans an understanding and love of the principles which made this nation the freest, most prosperous, happiest, and most respected nation on earth. Visit topreservethenation.com and order my book and lectures to begin the restoration of this great nation.
Okay, girls, about finished with your lesson on money?
Daddy, what is a buy-sell spread for gold coins?
Well, when you sell a gold coin to a coin shop that's worth, say, $1,200, you don't actually get $1,200. But don't worry, we're members of UPMA now, so we don't have to worry about that.
Daddy, what if somebody steals our gold?
We don't have any gold at the house. It's stored safely in the UPMA vault, securely and insured.
But the S&P 500 outperformed gold. Daddy, gold is a bad investment.
Some people do think of it that way, but actually, gold is money. And as members of the United Precious Metals Association, we can use our gold at any store, just like a credit card. Or I can ask them to drop it right into Mommy and Daddy's bank account, because we're a UPMA member family. Find out more at upma.org. That's upma.org.
Promoting God, family, and country. You are listening to Liberty Roundtable Radio.
All right, back with you live. Sam Bushman on your radio. Hard-hitting talk at your fingertips, ladies and gentlemen. So we're talking about blackouts. Blackouts are growing threats to U.S. cities. The author of a new study said that the combination of blackouts and extreme heat may be the deadliest climate event we can imagine. As much as winter storms and extreme cold remains a threat, the greater risk to humans is temperatures rising from extreme heat. We already know the heat is already the most dangerous type of severe weather event in terms of health and safety for people. They say these cities that they did the research on have these cooling centers, but they're not near enough to cool enough people to matter. And, listen to this carefully, the cooling centers don't have backup generators. Wow. So now you got a situation where even if you go to the heat or cooling center, you might not get cooled if the power goes out of the cooling center, right? Because they don't have backup generators. Wow. I don't know how to respond to that, really. It's a sad tale, and we're simply not prepared for it. Now, are you going to get prepared, ladies and gentlemen? What's the best way to deal with heat issues? And I don't know if people know. I don't know if people realize. I don't know if people know how to deal with this. Do you know how to deal with this, folks? What if you were caught in a severe heat situation and your power is out? What would you do? You know, one of the best things to do is if you have a basement, go in the basement. It's cooler, right? That's simple for a lot of us. Although in some of these places, that's not a very, that's not an option. What else can you do? Get outside in the shade and pray for a breeze? What else can you do? Get water. What we used to do as little kids, I'll tell you a little story when we were little kids. You know what? We didn't have air conditioning in all of our cars when I was young. I mean, air conditioning, I think, came a little bit later. I don't remember air conditioning in our early cars. Maybe we just didn't have good cars and air conditioning was broken. I was so young, I don't remember. But I know this, what we would do is we had an ice chest full of ice. We would take off our shirt, at least the boys would, and the girls would do something similar, and put it in the ice water and get our shirt all wet, cold ice, and put our shirt back on. And it lasted for a good, you know, 20 minutes, half hour while your shirt, at first it was cold, but would drive through the hot, hot desert, Barstow, California, some of these places, it'd be 120 degrees outside, 110, whatever, going through Vegas and anything else, it'd be really, really, really hot. And we'd just take off our shirt and put it in ice and cool it down and put our shirt back on and let that cool us down for a while. That plus the windows down in your car while you're driving, even though the wind was hot, if you didn't have too much wind, it would actually cool you. So there's a lot of flexible options that we can do with this kind of stuff. It's just interesting, though, that some of the elderly and some of the vulnerable and some of the people who are in poverty would struggle mightily. Right? They would struggle mightily with this. And it's something to really worry about or consider, right? And I bring it all up because in our society, what we do is we do these kinds of studies, and I appreciate the studies being done. I'm not really excited about a government university doing the study and taking my tax dollars for it, right? But I do appreciate the study and the necessity of it, if you will. But what are we going to do now with the study and the results? We know the truth, all right? If we believe it, do you believe this is the truth? Do you believe blackouts are a growing threat to U.S. cities? Do you believe, like the author of the study says, that the combination of a blackout and an extreme heat wave may be the deadliest climate event we can imagine? Hey, Cameron, do you believe that? Do you think heat combined with a blackout could be the deadliest of all the different, you know? No, Cameron doesn't believe. What do you think would be the worst storm that we could have or the worst climate event? Extreme cold, extreme heat, hurricanes, tornadoes, fires. What do you think is the most likely realistic event that could cause serious problems in society and mass illness and death? Because it's an interesting question, right? All right, Cameron's thinking about it, but he doesn't think it's heat combined with blackouts. I know this, every storm or every, whatever you want to call it, heat wave, every freeze or cold snap or whatever you want to call it, every tornado, every hurricane, every microburst, every whatever, all of them are bad. When the power goes out, it compounds the problem big time, right? And that's kind of a really talking about what we need to do is get rid of the grid and develop better ways for people to generate local power, because then even if power's out for a certain group, I mean, you can have a storm in one area of a state or in one county, and it won't affect the rest of the state. So people might go down there, but it wouldn't take everybody else down if it wasn't a big power grid dependency thing, if we weren't all dependent on one another. So one of the greatest things that I would advocate for is to find ways to generate power off the grid or generally locally generated, whether it be generators, whether it be battery packs, whether it be so that you could weather some of these things. Now, I don't know that you could do AC, but keep in mind, even if you have the power out, if you can run a fan, which is much, much lower power, I get that it doesn't work as well as AC, right? But I'm telling you right now, in a heat wave, if you have a fan, it can make a tremendous difference. You know, oftentimes they say it's this temperature, but it feels like this temperature. Have you ever seen those kind of things? When you talk about how it feels, even with a fan, it makes a lot of difference. And if you can get shade and a fan, now you're actually starting to make a big difference. Or if you could take a place that's super hot and you can somehow just at least get a little breeze blowing, a little bit of wind moving. I mean, it makes a tremendous difference. A tremendous difference, right? So I think that there are little things that we could do that would take us a long way. And I'm not really here to debate what is the worst climate disaster or whatever you want to call it or whatever we could have. I do know that whatever happens when you take out electricity, you know, people can be freezing cold when you are freezing or super hot, or, you know, none of those conditions are great. But keep in mind that, you know, in past centuries we lived with it. But we didn't live in such high-rise cities and buildings and stuff. We could, you know, build a fire. And the fire could keep us warm if we just had trees or wood around or coal or anything else. Nowadays, when you're in these big cities, you can't do any of that kind of stuff. So I would submit to you that living in the big cities are part of the problem. Being in such a metropolis in the first place is part of the problem. And I'm not here to debate which circumstance is the worst. None of them are pleasant. All of them there can be remedies for with a little bit of forethought, though. And I don't think it takes a gazillion dollars. A generator to let a fan run could make all the difference in the world. You don't have to run your air conditioner. You don't have to run a heater. Those are very power-hungry kind of technologies. But you can run a little fan. You can take off your shirt and put it in cool water and put your shirt back on and cool down. And believe it or not, even just a little bit to prevent your body from overheating makes the biggest difference. Small changes make tremendous contributions to addressing a problem. Small little things oftentimes have big impact on solutions. And so I'm not really here to argue which is the worst storm or which would be the worst scenario or whatever else, like some of these authors. But I am here to argue that we need to do a little bit of forethought about this. And we need to think, what would we do if we had a serious cold snap? Could we build a fire? Do we have a way to heat ourselves? Do we have lots of blankets? Do we have a way that we could get into one room of our home if it was really cold, close the doors and you know, through our body heat and enough blankets and maybe some kind of other little heating options make a difference? I mean, if you even had some of those preparedness hand warmers, make a huge difference, folks. I mean, my dad literally grew up putting rocks on the fire and taking those rocks and putting them in the bottom of his, you know, bed or sleeping bag at night to stay warm. But you'd have to have a fire or a stove or some way to accomplish that, right? But, you know, that's not a very expensive option unless you're in the big city and you can't do that kind of stuff. You know, the homeless try to use trash cans and burn a big fire in a trash can to get warm. I'm not advocating for that. I'm just saying that, hey, people resort to whatever they need to. But if you plan a little bit, it will take you a long way. Anyway, enough on this half hour of that, but I thought it was an interesting study, and I thought I'd bring a few solutions to the table. Why? Because this is Solutions Radio.
Exposing corruption. Informing citizens. Pursuing liberty. You're listening to Liberty News Radio.
You- USA Radio News with Lance Pry.
House Republican leader Kevin McCarthy told his Republican colleagues to expect a vote on Wednesday on removing Representative Liz Cheney from her leadership post. Cheney is under fire from members of her own party for continually battling the GOP. More signs the pandemic is coming to an end. People who deliver packages to businesses and homes classified as couriers and messengers by the Labor Department saw the industry's biggest monthly job losses in more than 20 years in April. Indeed's Nick Bauer says employers in the industry might be thinking that demand for delivery services won't be as strong post-pandemic as they originally thought. End quote. NBC has announced it will drop its broadcast of the Golden Globe ceremony in 2022 after a Hollywood backlash over the ethics of the group and its lack of diversity. Actor Tom Cruise joined the revolt by returning three Golden Globes he's won over the years. USA Radio News.
Hello, this is Wayne Allyn for our newest sponsor, Asset Strategies, or ASI for short. ASI is a precious metals powerhouse. They sell gold and silver. Never in history has there been a more important moment to buy gold and silver. ASI has been in business for 39 years. They've served over 20,000 clients and sold $5 billion worth of gold, silver, and precious metals with zero complaints. Last year, gold saw gains of 25%. Silver nearly doubled gold's performance. Now Democrats are in charge. Green New Deal, open borders, free healthcare for illegals, bailout broke cities and states. The debt is about to go through the stratosphere. The time to buy is now. The owners of ASI, Michael and Rich Chekin, have been my close personal friends for 16 years. ASI is the company I trust when it comes to buying and selling precious metals. Call now to receive a free consultation and a free 1 ounce silver eagle with every qualifying purchase when you mention the Wayne Allyn Show. Call 800-831-0007. That's 800-831-0007. Or visit assetstrategies.com.
A shooting in Times Square Saturday evening still has the suspect at large. From the incident, a hero is called out at the New York Police Department. Tim Berg from the Phoenix USA Radio News Bureau reports.
We're hearing from the New York City cop who carried a little girl to safety after this weekend's Times Square shooting. Officer Alyssa Vogel says her motherly and police instincts kicked in when she realized the four-year-old had been shot.
Took the tourniquet off my gun belt and started applying it to her leg. That's when Officer Farter and I put it on her and then checked her to see if she had any more gunshot wounds.
The little girl, a woman from New Jersey, and a woman from Rhode Island are all recovering from wounds, although it's not believed they were the intended targets. The suspect was allegedly shooting at his brother and remains on the run.
NYPD Commissioner DeMache.
How many kids have to be shot before we take this seriously? Bad policies have consequences.
You're listening to USA Radio News.
Begging politicians, bureaucrats, and educrats, and all do-gooders to please obey the supreme law of the land, the Constitution. This is Liberty Roundtable.
All right, back with you live, ladies and gentlemen. Sam Bushman on your radio. Hard-hitting talk always at your fingertips. LovingLiberty.net, LibertyRoundtable.com. Spread the word, tell your neighbor. By the way, check out our apps for live and on-demand radio that are free. Android app, iPhone app, LovingLiberty.net. Download them free today. All right, as we've mentioned, they have divide lines in the cancel culture agenda to divide everybody on every topic everywhere all the time. Doesn't matter if it's male, female, gay, straight, white, black, Christian, non-Christian, tall, short, skinny, fat, whatever. They don't care. They just want to divide, divide, divide. We hopefully are smart enough. It's the culture war, stupid. We hope we're smart enough not to fall for their divisionary lies. We can all be kind and respectful and considerate and get along and do very well. Now, that's the truth, whether they want you to believe it or not. But nevertheless, there are two articles that have come out virtually in the same week that show the divide amongst the states. Some call it a red and blue divide, right? Some say that it's, I don't know, a red and blue thing or a Republican-Democrat thing or, I don't know what it is, okay? Because I don't believe the Republicans are always good and the Democrats are always bad. I don't think the labels matter. Some people have an agenda to promote and stabilize America. Some don't. All right. So you've heard of this critical race theory. All right. And critical race theory is this general idea that says, hey, whites are racist. There is no other way about it. They're born racist. They're always racist. If they say they're not racist, it just proves they are, and it shows how ignorant they are because it's so systemic, so ingrained, so white privileged to the point where they don't even acknowledge it. They just can't help not knowing it. It's so systemic. It's so innate. It's so, okay, that, and nobody else can be a racist. Blacks can't, because they're the underdogs. They're the downtrodden. They're the oppressed. And the oppressed, of course, can't be racist. So they want to try to teach this, you know, in my opinion, critical race theory in government schools and everything else. But two states are battling about it now. And they're not battling because they're fighting each other. They're just picking 180-degree different roads. Headline says, Idaho Governor Brad Little signed a bill that prohibits public schools and universities from introducing critical race theory. They call it CRT instruction. If it compels students to view others through the discriminatory lens of race. All right. So Brad Little, governor of Idaho, says we're not having critical race theory here if it requires you to look through the critical lens of race. So this idea that says whites are just racist, they can't help it lens. It's systemic. There's nothing they can do. In fact, their denial proves they're racist. Okay, that's not going to happen in Idaho. But a nearby state, the state of Washington, Governor Jay Inslee, he's the governor of Washington State, signs a bill mandating critical race training in public schools. So think about that for a minute, ladies and gentlemen. You have these two states that are right next to each other. What do they call it? In the West, the Rocky Mountain states, I don't know what you call it, the left coast. What? Where is it? Washington and Idaho. And they're states that are literally right next to each other, right? One's got a liberal extreme Democrat governor. The other one's got a somewhat conservative. I mean, I don't believe that Brad Little's a real constitutional patriot necessarily, but he at least gets this, because the divide couldn't be more contrasting, right? And the states that I point to for the example couldn't be more different in culture, different in expectations, but they're right next to each other. I mean, this just highlights the divide they've created amongst the states, almost more so than any other example that I can notate or annotate, whatever you want to call it, denote, right? Think about that. One's going to mandate critical race theory in schools. The other one's going to literally prohibit it by law. Now, what I like about it, though, is both of them signed a bill. They both signed a bill. So at least the proper legislative bodies came up with the legislation, and the governors are signing it as opposed to an edict from the governor. I like that. At least they're using the checks and balances to some degree. But I look at it and say, I don't think you could find a more divergent path for two states to take. A bill that prohibits public schools and universities from introducing critical race theory, especially if it requires one to look through a racial lens. The other one signs a bill mandating critical race training in public schools. So whether it's called critical race training or critical race theory, it's still CRT training, CRT theory, whatever you want to call it. Okay. But the states couldn't be more in opposition to each other on this. And I don't know how to respond to this, except for, I will say this. A lot of the people in Washington are wanting to leave the state of Washington, meaning counties. And they're literally, as far as I can tell, saying we want to leave California, or we want to leave Washington and become part of Idaho. They literally want to switch states because they believe their associations with Washington are too liberal, too extreme, too radical. Because remember, Washington is primarily controlled by what? Seattle? The West Coast is where most of Washington residents, Washingtonians, what do you call them? Anyway, that's where most of them live, right? So as a result, a lot of the Washington people from the eastern portion of the state want to leave Washington and switch states to the state of Idaho. Anyway, the reason that I bring all that up is because that movement is not going away anytime soon. And I submit to you that these two divergent bills will do nothing but widen the chasm and will do nothing but encourage these people. I don't know what these groups from wanting to leave the state of Washington and join the state of Idaho. This will just push them more to promote harder this agenda that, man, we have got to get out of Washington state, right? We've got to get out of Washington state. We've got to do something completely different. That's kind of what people are, you know, thinking. It's shocking to me how we can just be so completely opposing in our views in America nowadays. And the views, they're not only opposing, like I disagree, I feel this way and you feel that way, but they are, what do you want to call it? They're so opposed that they play contrarian beyond a disagreement. Meaning it drives a wedge and creates this, to some degree, irreconcilable fault line. Look, you either believe in critical race theory or you don't. You believe it's a fact or not. You believe it's real or you believe it's contrived. Right? Are whites systemically racist and every white is a racist? Period. In the paragraph. And everybody who's not white is a victim and not a racist and can't be by the very nature of their victimhood. That's the critical race theory agenda. That's the focus point. And either you believe that's true by nature, that it's really the reality, that is the facts, or you believe that's nothing but propaganda designed to divide people. See, I don't believe it. I don't believe it. Now, we got to discuss racism and opinions and beliefs and stuff. I think that black people enjoy being with black people more. And I think white people enjoy being with white people more. And I think Asian people enjoy being with Asian people more. And Hispanics like to be with Hispanics, not because they hate the other races, or because they want to harm the other races, or because they have it out for them or anything like that. It's because they feel comfortable with the familiar. Okay? Blacks feel comfortable with blacks because they have the same language. And I don't mean English. I mean dialect or whatever you want to call it. Cultural language, slang, etc. Whites have the same. Hispanics have the same. And they feel comfortable around that slang. They pronounce words the same. They understand mutual meanings. They have cultural norms and acceptable behaviors and responses to things that others don't get. And it's not that they hate me or that I hate them. It's that I gravitate towards the comfortable. I gravitate towards the known as opposed to the unknown. So do you. So does everyone. That doesn't mean that there's racism at the core of it all. And that doesn't mean that I want harm to anyone. Now, I'm going to advocate for the white race because I'm white. Whenever I have a baby, I perpetuate the white race. Why wouldn't I? I'm white. My wife's white. Therefore, we make white babies. We just want to have a family. We want to follow God's laws and have children that will bless our lives and we can bless their lives. Okay? But I don't have any problem with other races doing the same. It is right for non-whites to have babies and celebrate their heritage also, is it not? But when does it become racism? When is it? Let's talk about this divide a little bit more. Then we'll talk about the happiest place on earth. Shall we? On Liberty Roundtable Live.
Why don't we say to the government writ large that they have to spend a little bit less? Anybody ever had less money this year than you had last? Anybody better having a 1% pay cut? You deal with it. That's what government needs, a 1% pay cut. If you take a 1% pay cut across the board, you have more than enough money to actually pay for the disaster relief. But nobody's going to do that because they're fiscally irresponsible. Who are they? Republicans. Who are they? Democrats. Who are they? Virtually the whole body is careless and reckless with your money. So the money will not be offset by cuts anywhere. The money will be added to the debt, and there will be a day of reckoning. What's the day of reckoning? The day of reckoning may well be the collapse of the stock market. The day of reckoning may be the collapse of the dollar. When it comes, I can't tell you exactly, but I can tell you it has happened repeatedly in history when countries ruin their currency.
You know where the solution can be found, Mr. President? in churches, in wedding chapels, in maternity wards across the country and around the world. More babies will mean forward-looking adults, the sort we need to tackle long-term, large-scale problems. American babies in particular are likely going to be wealthier, better educated, and more conservation-minded than children raised in still industrializing countries. As economist Tyler Cowen recently wrote, quote, by having more children, you're making your nation more populous, thus boosting its capacity to solve climate change. The planet does not need for us to think globally and act locally so much as it needs us to think family and act personally. The solution to so many of our problems, at all times and in all places, is to fall in love, get married, and have some kids.
With news the networks refuse to use, you are listening to the Liberty Roundtable Radio Talk Show.
All right, back with you live, ladies and gentlemen. So I don't know how to respond to these divides in America, whether it be race, but now they're dividing states over race. You got Washington State promoting critical race theory. You got Idaho rejecting critical race theory via their legislatures and respective governors. And it couldn't be more divergent. And it's not just I can disagree with you and you believe in it and I don't. It's a matter of what we're forcing to be the education and you know, whatever you want to call it, mandates of the state. It's codified by government, by legislative bodies, signed by governors, etc. And it couldn't be more opposing and it couldn't be more contradictory. I mean, we've taken contrarian views to the extreme to where there's a widening chasm, a greater divide that I don't think is going away anytime soon. Jay Inslee, governor of Washington, Brad Little, governor of Idaho, I don't know that they can have more different views. And I don't know what it means for society either, but I'm concerned, very concerned. Do you believe critical race theory is real? Do you believe all white people are racist and nobody else, anybody that's non-white, if you will, not racist? See, I don't believe that lie. I believe there's racists everywhere. And there's people everywhere who are not racists of all persuasions or all ethnicities or whatever you want to call it. Whatever words we use that are appropriate for this. Like, am I allowed to say black? Am I allowed to say colored? Or do I have to say African-American every time? When you say non-white, is that everybody that's what? How do you define Caucasian? What if you have a Hispanic person that's very, very white? Or what if you have a white guy that's very, very dark-skinned? How do they fit in? Is it looks? Is it ethnicity based on DNA tests? What is it? You know, I don't know. And I don't care, to be honest with you. What I care about is we're all God's children, and I want us to be kind and behave and treat each other with respect and dignity and honor. And just because I want to have a family, that doesn't mean I don't want you to. Meaning you of any other race or ethnicity than me. I want all of us to celebrate our heritage. I want all of us to have families and loved ones surrounding us. All of us really want the same thing, folks. We want to have food in our bellies. We want to have homes and warmth and cooling and safety and happiness. We want to be left alone to pursue our own dreams. We want to work hard together and pray together and cry together and fail together and succeed together and do all the things that people do. That is the human quest, if you will, to learn to obey God Almighty. Or not. But just because I want to do that with people that I know and that I'm comfortable with, it doesn't mean that I'm against the guy next door that may be of a different race than me. I know he wants the same thing I want. And I may hang out with him if we have a lot of things in common. And I may not if we don't have things in common. The black guy that loves radio and loves preparedness and loves outdoors and those kind of things and loves technological things, you know, technology and all that kind of stuff. The black guy that does that would be more of my friend than the white guy that isn't interested in any of those things. See? To me, it isn't about race. But for the folks who want to drive a wedge between all of us, everything is only about race. That's it. That's all there is. It's systemic. This critical race education or training or theory is the core to them. That's all that matters. Okay? Now, if the guy next door thinks I'm a racist because he believes in critical race theory, I don't care if he's white or black, but I probably won't be friends with him or hang out with him because I don't believe in that. He thinks I'm a racist by nature and I can never get rid of it. And there's nothing that I can do about it. I don't know how to be friends with someone like that. I would hope that they learn about me over time, that I live to the best of my ability, a Christian life. I would hope that they watch how I behave to people around me. I would hope to treat him as a respectful neighbor, no matter what race he is. I would hope he'd feel comfortable coming over to borrow a cup of sugar if he needed one. I would hope if he needed something, let's say his car battery went dead and he needed someone to help him, I'd hope he'd knock on my door and say, hey, do you have a way to help me, you know what, jumpstart my car or whatever, and I'd love to help. I don't care what race he is. I don't give a rip what race he is or she is. I would be willing to help that person. And by the way, even though I disagree with the lifestyles of the gay and the lesbians and the transgenders and all these other people, if they came over and they were my neighbor and wanted help as well to start their car or wanted to borrow a cup of sugar or any of those things, I'd be glad to oblige either way. They're my neighbors. I should do my best to care for them and look out for them. Okay, if I had a black neighbor and he went on vacation, I would look after his house, just being my neighbor, just as much as I would my white neighbor. Why? Because I'm not interested in the racial divide. You look, if my neighbor's kind to me and respectful to me, and I can be that way to them, great. I would hope that the black person would watch out for my house just like my white neighbor or my Asian neighbor or my Latino neighbor or whatever. I would hope we could set aside all this stuff. And I really believe in the real world, that's really the way it is for the most part. I think most of us agree with that view, and most of us are that way. And I think that it's just this mainstream press in bed with education and bureaucrats that are literally driving this wedge. Now, I personally believe that Jay Inslee's out in the weeds, and I believe Brad Little's right, that we got to reject this race theory. After all, it's only a theory. We shouldn't be teaching it as fact, number one. Number two, we shouldn't be viewing others through a racial lens. We shouldn't do that. We shouldn't look at anyone with a discriminatory racial lens. I don't think white people should do it. I don't think black people should. I don't think anybody should do it. And if there are racists among us, I would hope that we show them a better way. We don't need to reject them and marginalize them in society and attack them either. What we need to do is love them into understanding that, you know what, it's not the way you think it is. There are ways to go about that by patience and kindness and long-suffering. And I think Jesus taught us the way, did he not? The Prince of Peace taught us the way. By the way, was Jesus white? I don't know. He was a Jew. If you ask my opinion, we don't have real photos. We just have depictions from others, but we don't have real evidence. But my guess would be that he had olive skin. Right? Is that white or is that non-white? I don't think it's black. But I would have to say it's non-white. If you look at a piece of paper and you look at my skin, I'm non-white too. The white piece of paper is much more white than I am. So, folks, we need to get past this stuff. We really do. All right, headline says Disneyland ready to bring Happy back to California. Palm Spring Desert Sun teaming up with USA Today for this piece. The wait is almost over for Disneyland fans. But before you go, here are some tips to help you prepare to go to Disneyland or for you to go to California Adventure, they say. You're going to be restricted quite a bit, I guess, is the real word, the way to say it, right? They say more information is available on the Disneyland website. But I guess happiness is only available for Californians. They say Disneyland tickets, And reservations for now are only available to California residents. They say in the parks, tickets and reservations must be made in advance online or through the app FastPass and the Disney Max Pass, as well as Magic Morning and extra Magic Hour offerings. They're suspended until further notice. I just don't know how to respond to all this, folks. It just seems so foreign. They say temperature checks, screening with no-touch thermometers will be required before entering the parks. Based on state health guidelines, anyone with a temperature of 100.4 or higher will not be allowed entry, or nor will anyone else in their party be allowed to enter the park. Masks, they say, face coverings could only be removed when actively eating or drinking. But you must be stationary and physically distanced from others when doing so. Eating and drinking are only permitted in designated dining areas. Wow. Check the Disneyland app or website for acceptable face coverings. The gates to the happiest place on earth and California Adventure, they say, are open now for the first time in over 412 days. That's the longest closure for Disneyland in its 65-year history. Wow. It's crazy, folks. They say, but things won't be quite as they were pre-pandemic, as safety measures to help the spread or to help prevent the spread of the coronavirus will be in place, including face mask requirements, temperature checks, and distancing. Of course, no character hugs either. Thousands of fans tuned in when the relighting of Sleeping Beauty's castle was broadcast live on Facebook as part of a, quote, soft reopening event for cast members and crew as castle lights came on for the first time in more than a year. When you wish upon a star and the sound of Walt Disney welcoming you to this happy place on opening day, July 17th, 1955, were heard in the background. So they're hamming this up. They're getting a lot out of this, man. They say that just sent chills. It's so funny how something so simple can be so significant, some people are saying and writing. Disney rides await. Most of the popular attractions are expected to be open when guests return, including Pirates of the Caribbean, Mountain, Big Thunder Mountain, Railroad and Disneyland, Star Wars at Galaxy's Edge. Reservations will be needed to board the popular Star Wars rides. And they go on and on and on and on about this. Pre-pandemic, Disneyland averaged about 51,000 guests per day, while California Adventure was drawing about 27,000 guests per day. That's according to the Theme Entertainment Organization. Anyway, there you have it. The happiest place on earth. Open, but so restricted. Personally, I don't know if that I could even have fun. So I was going to go to California on a trip. I decided to cancel it and go to Florida. I'll be in Florida, in November or something like that for the event. I just jettisoned California. Those people there are crazy. Thanks for being alongside for the ride. We live in a rough world, folks. Please stand in the culture war. Please back God Almighty. In God we trust. God save the Republic.